Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. Clerk will note the roll, quorum being present. May I have a motion to approve the minutes from May 23rd, 2011? Representative Mack.
Morning. I approve or I've moved the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mack moved the minutes from May 23rd. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Members, we are here today, and I appreciate everybody traveling in today for this. We would prefer to do this during a special session when everyone was here already, but unfortunately, we had to make everyone travel in. Apologies for that, and thank you for making it in. We have a series of resolutions dealing with management of the House and also with issues around a potential shutdown. Those are in your packet. We'll go through a series one at a time. We'll start with the R19B resolution, and that deals with core functions. If I could have Mr. McCormick explain that would be good.
Mr. Chair, the R19B resolution authorizes House representatives to file a response or otherwise appear in the litigation that has already been commenced in Ramsey County District mm-hmm. Court or other mm-hmm. similar proceedings to provide that these are any proceedings to provide temporary funding of core functions of state government. The resolution allows the chair of the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration to designate and retain counsel to represent the House in the litigation and any other subsequent proceedings.
Chair.
Representative Paymer.
I have a couple questions on this, if I might, for staff or for you. So this obviously is permissive language that you may retain counsel. So do you have counsel in mind? Do we have a budget for how much it might cost to retain counsel during this process?
Representative Paymar, the counsel, as it's been discussed, is at the Speaker's discretion. The Speaker has discussed and retained Eric Magnuson.
Okay.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to recuse myself.
And then Mr. Chair, so the purpose of having counsel, we have the Attorney General who, and also the Governor, who has a position on what are critical services that must be maintained, depending on how the judge rules. So why? The purpose of this resolution is to say that at least the House majority believes that there are alternative views on what should be critical services, and therefore the House majority wants its voice to be heard if there are legal hearings. Would that be an accurate assessment?
No, Representative Paymar, that would not be accurate. The interest is on the behalf of the House in total, not in a subset of the majority. The Attorney General has standing. Has joined us. Our issue is very, very narrow and limited in scope, and it's two pieces. Those would deal specifically with our ability to function and have access to the resources to move forward, and also specifically the requesting mediation by the governor within this. There was the Attorney General Woods has been in contact with House staff, and we have heard from them that there is a problem because one of the House members, specifically Representative Winkler, announced that he will be suing to prevent ongoing funding of core functions and moving forward. So those two pieces necessitated us getting outside counsel for the House, and also Mr. Michael may be able to answer specific questions about discussions with the Attorney General's office and about the narrowness of the scope of moving forward. Representative Paymer.
Well, let me just ask one more question. I'll let others. If I understood you correctly, you said that this resolution would then allow the House to move forward and join with the Attorney General's office. Did I?
No.
You said join.
No, I'm sorry.
I want to get this clear on the record because I want to know what counsel is doing on behalf of the House.
Again, Representative Paymer, the scope is very, very narrow with Mr. Magnuson and those two points. And I'll ask Mr. Michael to perhaps amplify on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joel Michael from House Research. There really, as the chair indicated, two issues that we're seeking representation on. One, first, as probably many of you know, the House actually has an appropriation. Because of our carryover, our appropriations, the legislative appropriations do not cancel, and so unlike most other entities in state government, we actually do have an appropriation. And so the first point is really just to make sure that the actual payment functions are available for us to access that appropriation through the Department of Management and Budget. And so it's simply sort of asking the court to make sure that there are actually people at MMB, and the governor and the attorney general have indicated that there will be, you know, they're requesting substantial numbers of people at MMB that can actually process our payments under our existing appropriation. And so that's the one thing to request. So it has nothing to do with what's critical or core or anything like that. The other thing is that the governor has requested the court to order mediation, and the House is just saying that it's not appropriate for the court to order that. It's a decision basically for the House and the governor and the Senate and the governor to decide whether or not how they want to negotiate out a solution.
Mr. Chair, then I'll
Representative Paymer.
So I still don't understand why the Rules Committee needs to act on this. I mean, it seems to me that I don't understand why we need this motion. It seems like you're giving sort of carte blanche to hire counsel to handle any issue. It doesn't speak narrowly, as you say, or as you're interpreting this, to either of those two items, because there's no language to suggest that. There's no language in the bill that you're asking us to support today. Do you see it, Mr. Michael? Maybe you can help me. Where is it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymer, I mean, first of all, I'm not asking you to support this, but you're right that the resolution is drafted broadly to give the chair of the committee and the speaker broad discretion, but the intent of the leadership is to ask only for those two elements of relief. Obviously, one can't know what the future portends or how litigation unfolds, and so the reason for the broad discretion and not sort of limiting it to just those two issues is to prevent the necessity for another Rules Committee meeting to amend that resolution to authorize something else. And so, I mean, and this is sort of the standard way this has typically been done. For example, when counsel was hired in the unallotment case, a virtually identical resolution was used.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Paymer.
It seems to me that your caucus strenuously objected to the use of outside counsel during unallotment, so why would we accept this carte blanche resolution allowing you to hire legal counsel for whatever purposes, for however long this goes, because you know, there's not been negotiation in good faith, at least from someone who's not in the inner circle here during negotiations. Why would we support that?
Representative Paymar, I think that was a very different situation that you're bringing up, with different circumstances, using staff and other things, objective, if you will. However, we have a court date on Thursday, and the House does need representation in order so that staff can continue to function and move forward, both in the minority and in the majority. And so it is to that interest that we move forward.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll let others chime in here, but I think I may have an oral amendment, and would also ask you what you thought about maybe really, if we're going to make it narrow, make the resolution narrow and indeed incorporate the language that Mr. Michael is saying that this resolution does. But I'll stop for now.
Thank you, Representative Paymar. Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is on the presumption of a House position on mediation. What is the House position on mediation, and do we not have to have some process by which we take such a position before counsel can carry that position forward in a court setting?
Representative Breiner, the request made by the governor, we believe, is unconstitutional. It would basically say that all of the work that we have done and the process of moving forward we're not going to do that. I don't believe that the minority would like to be put in that position. I know I wouldn't. We as a legislature have to stand up for why we're here and why we were elected. So we believe that will not stand. However, it does need to be argued in court. Representative Bryant.
I'm not asking for your rationale on mediation. I'm asking whether we not, is a formal process whereby there is a House position on this issue. And I didn't sit on rules the last time this sort of procedure occurred, but my understanding is rules actually voted on the unallotment position before it moved forward as held by counsel. So how do we presume there is a House position on this issue?
Representative Breiner, there's a legal position. We don't believe that this is constitutional or stand in court. If you have a motion to bring before the committee, we would certainly entertain it. The packets have been out and the information has been available to you. So this is a court proceeding, Representative Breiner.
Mr. Chair, I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying, as a member of this committee, until I sat here today, I did not know that counsel was being hired for the purpose of putting forward or defending a House position on mediation. I only learned of that now. So I'm asking, what is the grounds for the House position? You're saying that you think it exists legally already. I'm not certain that that's the case, and I'm not certain that I do or don't support that viewpoint. I haven't heard the arguments, and I'm not, as a member of the House, ready to say that I'm comfortable having counsel represent me in that regard.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question I had, I guess, was similar to what Representative Breiner was asking, is that it seems to give carte blanche to the Speaker and the Majority Leader to decide how the House will be represented in court, and to not have a vote on that. You know, and be likely the majority would pass the position, but I do think the process of this body is important to its integrity, and I think this resolution undermines the integrity of this committee and the body as a whole. And I do think that there's a difference between what happened with the unallotment court case and what's happening now. I mean, now we're talking about thousands of people losing their jobs on July 1st, and then we were talking about the governor and many people's views of the law, and you're talking about your view of the law, the governor overreaching his authority. And so I think at a very minimum, this should be drafted more tightly, and perhaps if the chair doesn't think it's important for the Rules Committee to vote on a position of the House or the House to vote on a position of the House, perhaps make it clear that this would be representing individual members of the House or perhaps the leadership of the House, but not the whole body.
Well, thank you, Representative Knuth. I appreciate that. And I think that, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Knuth.
I just had one other question. I know, Mr. Chair, we in previous years have used our nonpartisan staff on these sorts of things, and I'm just trying to understand why we wouldn't, and we adopted a rule this year saying that we would not be allow the House to do that, and I'm wondering why we would be spending additional money to hire outside counsel rather than amending our rules in this particular case. I'm just not clear why we'd be using that money when we're obviously very short on money, because we could vote to change that rule as well, and I would like to understand the rationale for that.
Thank you, Representative Knuth, and it did ring a bell with me in the rules change that we put forward, and I did look back at that, and actually it was the rule change that we used was that we couldn't use nonpartisan staff for litigation within the realm. If you remember, we had, in the last biennium, we had nonpartisan staff in a legal fight that a lot of the folks in the minority felt that that was inappropriate use of our nonpartisan staff, and a lot of the nonpartisan staff felt the same way, and that was the rule change that we had drafted within our rules this year. It was actually for the nonpartisan staff to not be used in outside court cases. So that was the change, and we can grab the rules book and get that out for you if you would like to discuss that. And Representative Knuth, if you'd like to bring forward, or Representative Paymar would like to bring up forward a motion before the committee supporting the use of a mediator, we would certainly be willing to entertain that. I don't think it's a good use. I would hope that the minority would not say that we should be replaced by a mediator. I would think that the minority would like to engage with the governor and find a budget that we can resolve this impasse and prevent a government shutdown without such a replacement of our job. Representative Paymar.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't have an amendment specifically to the to whether we should have a mediator or not. I think sometimes when two entities can't reach agreement, it's sometimes good to bring someone else in who's got maybe a fresh mind and can rephrase some of the questions and obstacles in a way that people can hear them. And obviously, you know, in our view, and you obviously have a different perception of it, the governor has come a long way in terms of his original position and offered a compromise, and I suspect you probably think that your side has offered a respectable compromise, but it, from afar, it certainly doesn't look like that to us. But my issue here, and I'm going to offer this oral amendment, I guess, is not dealing with the mediator, is I just think that this is far too open in terms of the retention of counsel to do, you know. I hope that there is no shutdown, and I hope we can get a resolution in the next few days here. But unless this was far more narrow, I can't support it. So I would offer on line 12 that the word state funds shall not be used for this purpose. It seems to me if it is that narrow, that this is something that we could do internally with staff and not hire outside counsel, especially when layoffs are going out to people all across the state. 35,000 people may lose their jobs.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is more of a question for Mr. Michael. I've had a conversation with him recently on other issues. And I'm guessing that having our nonpartisan research staff represent us in litigation is beyond the scope. I know your talents are vast and broad, but are beyond the scope of comfort level for our nonpartisan staff. And I'd like to hear from Mr. Michael if he could comment to that effect.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I am not a litigator. Litigation is a very specialized task in the legal world, and someone who does it only sporadically runs the risk of doing it incompetently. And I guess I would leave it at that on that question. The other thing I should fill in with what the chair alluded to before, we did initially when this came up, which is our normal course of action, contact the Attorney General and request them to represent the legislature. They initially, in our contacts with them, agreed to do that, but it was only subsequently when it appeared, which has come to fruition now with this suit by four senators, that the Attorney General was uncomfortable representing the legislature in that circumstance. But otherwise, had that all not happened, I think they would have simply represented the House and the Senate in court to make sure that we have access to the, to our carryover funding and so forth. So that's, that's sort of normally what happens, is that, the presumption is that the Attorney General will represent the House on matters like this. They're currently representing us in two other cases that we're involved in.
Other discussion? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really just think that we need to clarify that the Minnesota House, with this proposal, would not be joining this suit to defend essential services. And I'm debating whether or not that needs to be also added to any amendments that were proposed to this, because I want to make sure that the Speaker can't just decide, once this is passed, that he wants to define what essential services is.
Representative Hillstrom, do you want to make Representative Paymar has an amendment that we're going to presumably vote on shortly. Is that a discussion point to Representative Paymar? Would you like to make an additional amendment after we're finished with Representative Paymar's amendment?
Well, I can do that either way, but Mr. Chair, at some point I would like you to put that on the record, and then I can decide whether or not we need to add that as an amendment.
Thank you. So we're going to vote on the, Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think as the resolution is written, it does specify that it is only towards that litigation, court file number 62 CV 11-5203. So I think that makes sure that we accomplish the narrowness of scope that would address your concern.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, it doesn't, because it also says "or other similar proceedings." So,
well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I would assume, though, that the subsequent proceedings would be dealing just with that court file number. That's how I read it, at least. But.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The minority leader has asked to be recused from voting, and I'm wondering if he could explain why he wants to be recused and what the process is for that.
I'm certain Representative Thiessen's happy to do so. Representative Thiessen.
Briggs & Morgan is the firm I'm working for as a lawyer, and that's the firm that is going to represent, is that the majority leader indicated, is going to represent the House.
Thank you.
Further discussion of the Paymar amendment. I would speak against the Paymar amendment. And folks, none of us wants to be here Thursday. We're going to be in court looking at a shutdown. If we do that, the House is going to have to be able to act and react very quickly. We're going to have all our staff here and working in order to process these bills in a very fast manner, in order to limit the time of a shutdown, and if that unfortunately happens, this is going to help us do that. The resolution is drafted, and the scope of the outside counsel is very narrow, as has been indicated. I would speak against the Paymar amendment, and Representative Paymar.
I'm just going to reiterate. I wasn't going to. I'm fine if you want to take the vote, but it's not drafted very narrowly. So I mean, you keep saying that, and Mr. Michael said it, but it's not in the resolution. So I just want, for the record, to be clear that this is fairly wide open here regarding retaining legal counsel at the taxpayer's expense for subsequent proceedings and all other proceedings. It's not narrow as you're saying, and I think we should be clear about that. And I'm fine to take a vote on it now.
Fair enough, Representative Paymar. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please no. No.
No.
Does not pass. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could now clarify, again, the question that I asked prior to that vote, that the House is not joining suit to define essential services, and they will not be defining or will not be entering in that, because it's my understanding, based on the language, that should the Speaker decide tomorrow or 5 minutes after this resolution is passed to join the suit to define essential services under this court file number, which is the entire suit, that the Speaker could make that decision the minute this is passed. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Representative Hillstrom, the purpose for us hiring this lawyer is for the two purposes that was outlined by Mr. Michael, and perhaps Mr. Michael can speak specifically to mechanically what it means to be hired and how that will be, what exactly the role will be on Thursday. If you could do that, Mr. Michael, I would appreciate it. Just so I'm not misspeaking a legal or technical term, I'm not a lawyer, so perhaps Mr. Michael could do that for us.
Well, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I am, and I do understand how a lawyer is hired, but I also understand how language is drafted. And I believe that this says that under anything that is before the court, under this court file number and any other similar proceedings, that this lawyer will be retained to represent the House for any purpose that pretty much the Speaker Majority Leader so choose. So that means if tomorrow you decide you want to argue what essential services is or whether or not the court should pay for essential services or not, this could become a full-fledged House position paid for by the House with money that would otherwise go to pay for operations, I believe. Pay for staff actually working here. I think the Speaker could make that decision 5 minutes from now, even if you tell us right now he has no intention of doing that, he could change his mind 5 minutes. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Representative Hillstrom, the intent is to hire a lawyer for us on Thursday for those two purposes. The drafting of this resolution is very, very similar. The House staff is doing their job, which is what do we need to do to hire a lawyer to represent us for this, and that's what they've done. You may argue that it is not drafted to your liking. I appreciate that, Representative Hillstrom, but that is the intent, and that's how we're going to move forward. Representative Norton.
It looks like some folks want, I was talking to the bill in general, and we're now on a specific topic, so I don't know if others want to address a specific topic.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think there's the concern here is that, or one of the major concerns is that Representative Hillstrom was outlining, is that the Speaker wouldn't be prevented from defining core state government functions generally and arguing that, securing counsel to argue that in court. And so perhaps an amendment would make that more clear, because it's right now it's the whole court file. It's not just the parts related to the House. And so on line 9, I'd like to strike state government and insert functions of the Minnesota House of Representatives. So it would read, to provide temporary funding of core functions of the Minnesota House of Representatives. And I think that would give some comfort language. If the intention is, as you've been describing, it's not core functions the question will be, this is probably to have funding at MMB to put paychecks out, so we could say core function I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't realize it was, you were trying to narrowly define it this much. So, to provide temporary funding of core functions of state government necessary to maintain the functions of the Minnesota House of Representatives. And so, Mr. Chair, I would like to propose an oral amendment.
Representative Knuth, state your oral amendment.
On line 9, before the period, I'd like to insert necessary to maintain the functioning of the Minnesota House of Representatives.
Discussion. Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Knuth. I understand what you're trying to do, and I'm not entirely unsympathetic. I just think we don't really know what's going to happen in this circumstance, and there might be functions of government that we might find ourselves needing in a government shutdown situation and or special session that we can't foresee right now. And I think with your language, and I think it is well-intentioned, and I understand, at least I think, where you're going, I don't think we want to narrow it that much because it might prohibit us from funding something or looking at something that we might find that we need that the courts or the attorney general or the governor have decided isn't a core function. And it could be a whole variety of things. But I think it would behoove us as a house and as this committee to leave it as the current language.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hoppe, that's exactly what I'm worried about. What you basically just said is we may find that we need a service, which we consider a core service, that the court doesn't agree with, and we may want to go into court and argue what a core service or an essential service is. So the exact thing that I'm trying to say to you is what we're trying to clarify or not have happen is the very thing you just argued you might do.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way I understand it is this also allows us to make the argument on the whole mediation issue. And for me personally, we have 150 years worth of history in the state of Minnesota where negotiating the end of budget deals is the responsibility of the House, the Senate, and the governor, not an outside mediator who is not an elected official. And I think that it would be a huge disservice to the citizens of this state who elected this body, elected the Senate, and elected our governor to hand over that responsibility to a non-elected official. And this resolution allows us to make sure that we can defend that portion that the citizens expect from us as their elected officials. So I would argue against the amendment because it doesn't include that, and I think that's a really important piece, and I think the citizens of Minnesota expect to have elected officials rather than a non-elected official to be making these decisions as far as how the state functions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hillstrom.
I just can't let that go because mediators don't make decisions. Mediators get people in the room and rephrase questions and ask questions, and people come to decisions. Arbitrators make decisions. Mediators don't. And so I think it's really important that we talk about at least things legally accurately.
Further discussion? Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would have a question for Mr. Michaels, if I may.
Representative House.
Mr. Michaels, in the business of the House, I'm assuming the security, normal capital security, is paid for or shared in expenses by the House. But in the case of State Patrol, if they are here for security reasons, let's say Health and Human Services Committee and it's packed and could be contentious if there was a hearing, is that paid for by the House or State Patrol, or who pays for that?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Howes, you're a little bit out of my area of expertise here. I believe, though, that would be funded through other agencies of state government, and it's not part of the House budget, so I think it's likely, you know, public safety or admin or something like that, and so yes, matters sort of related to capital security don't come out of the House budget.
Representative House.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would like you and the Speaker to have a little bit of leeway.
Fair enough. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I had a couple clarifications. The court file number related to mediation, is that the 520, they're both the same. Okay, then I don't have that question anymore. With the amendment I proposed, I think you'd have some pretty broad leeway in arguing that security is important for the necessary function of the House and our committee assistants or our legislative assistants or the front desk staff. That, you know, there's a whole host of people who are necessary to the functioning of the House. And if it doesn't specify whether or not they're actually paid out of the House budget, my amendment would not specify that. It just narrows it to what you said the intention of this resolution was in the beginning, which was to be able to have the function of the House continue. And, you know, does keeping our state parks open count as a necessary function of the House? I would say absolutely not. But the way the amendment or the way the resolution is drafted without my amendment, it would allow the Speaker or the Chair of the Rules Committee to hire counsel to defend that as a core function of state government if they so chose. And so I think narrowing it a little bit to what the stated intention of the resolution was is, you know, the suspenders and belts version of lawmaking, and I think in these contentious times that's a smart thing to do, and I would hope members support the amendment.
Appreciate that, Representative Knuth, and I think we probably are both probably trying to do the same thing, but I think your amendment perhaps might go in the other direction. We will probably need MMB and other agencies to work together to keep the House open, and I think that is the is certainly the intention of the resolution as drafted. I could perhaps ask Mr. McCormick to, since you worked with the drafting of this, to perhaps go into how that might interact and why it was drafted the way it was drafted.
Mr. Chair, members, the draft. Was designed to give flexibility in order to react to what is likely to be a series of both hearings and potentially rulings and filings at the Ramsey Court level. Those may take a range of positions that could affect the House in a lot of anticipated and unanticipated ways. So this may be construed to have been written broadly, and I think it is written broadly, and I think that was the intention.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. I think we're ready to vote on the Knuth amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please no.
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 It does not prevail. Is there any? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have to say I wasn't happy from the very beginning, opening comments about we're here today because we're in anticipation of a government shutdown on July 1st. And to me, it's premature. You have a couple weeks to get work done. My anticipation is that you will do that. And I'm disappointed that we're doing this as early as we have. To me, it shows a sign that you've given up in your negotiations, and I certainly hope that isn't the case. But that's what the language said to me, how it spoke to me when you talked. I'm concerned because it is very broadly written, as was just described to this body. It's too broad. I wasn't here before, so if past bills have been written this way, past resolutions, you know, I guess that doesn't mean anything to me. I'm here looking at this one today. This is assuming positions that the House will have, whether it be about essential or critical employees or the need for a mediator, of which I might add my senator, Dave Senjum, announced at a town hall meeting on Thursday he thought it was a great idea to standing ovation by all the citizens that attended. So I'm not sure it's a universal belief that one party or the other doesn't think mediation is good. While he is a senator and doesn't speak for this body, it was an indication to me that that the governor is not alone on making this consideration. But we don't have a House position on these, and so to me, when I read this, we're going to retain counsel to represent the House in litigation without the House taking a position, and whether it be Rules Committee, if that's the best we can do, you know, short of not having everyone together for a special session, I think there should be very specific positions taken by this body then before you move forward with an attorney to hold a position. I just think we're setting ourselves up to say the House believes something that, frankly, you know, I'm quite certain, listening to just the discussion right now, that I'm not going to support, and yet will not have not had an opportunity to say so on record. And also, I think Representative Knuth made a great point earlier about we had a vote, which I think was pretty partisan earlier this year, about not being able to use nonpartisan staff, which would be very beneficial right now. And I'm a little surprised that you're not moving forward with a repeal of that rule as a starting place to move forward. If nothing else, it would allow us to perhaps spend less money on outside attorneys, and as I understand it, we're using money that's in the House coffers that could be used for our other staff and other functions. And so we're making a very conscious choice with this resolution to say it's more important to hire an attorney to represent a particular viewpoint than it is to use that money to support our staff and perhaps members if they're going to be taking their you know, salaries during the shutdown that seems to be moving along. So I just object to this on multiple levels, and I would like to offer an oral amendment, and I think it deals with obviously a resolution that's broadly written that no one's here, the majority doesn't want to seem to pare down, despite your comments, Mr. Chair, saying that these 2 points only are going to be discussed. This resolution doesn't say those two points only, and when we leave this room, you know, what you say here at the table, it's only your word that's tarnished. You can still go ahead and do what you want. So I would say one thing that might help me a little bit is on line 8 to remove the words, so to strike, or other similar proceedings, and on line 11, to put a period after the word proceedings and strike or other similar proceedings, and perhaps that, at least in some small way, begins to narrow the scope. It does already account for subsequent proceedings prior to that, which I think, in my mind, means that if the same case is continuing on, you can move on with it with this bill. But other cases that are brought forward would be eliminated. It's a small thing. It doesn't do near enough, but I'm wondering if that would address some of the concerns.
Thank you, Representative Norton. And as I understand it, this would probably limit the ability for us to continue, so that we have to have a Rules Committee meeting every time we have to come back and have another discussion with this moving forward. We need, hopefully, we don't have to we wouldn't be operating under these principles. We don't want to be here, Representative Norton. The governor brought this suit. We are just trying to defend the House's position and be able to keep our staff working so that we can get out of a shutdown if we're put into one. Would not want to limit us by changes that might happen within the litigation. So I would speak against your amendment and open it up for discussion for other members. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak in support of Representative Norton's oral amendment. I think it wouldn't be such a bad thing to have rules meetings as needed. That's part of the nature of democracy. It's not efficient, but it's meant to be an open process. And the kinds of issues we're talking about going to litigation for are major issues, and they deserve full openness in some public process. So I don't think your argument about the efficiency of more rules meetings is holds water, so to speak, in this discussion at all.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I see this action as an action on behalf of the House, the institution of the House. I don't see this as a specific stance on the part of the majority. One never knows what direction a court case will take. And and Representative Norton, in your reference to Representative Dean saying that he's given up and have just accepted that there's going to be a government shutdown, that's not what he was alluding to, I believe, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a court case on Thursday about a government shutdown. That is why we're here today. And I think we need to set the record straight on perhaps the way that you did or didn't perceive his words.
Further discussion to the Norton oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Norton oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
No.
Does not prevail. Further discussion? Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I realize that there's a court case on Thursday and all that, but now that we've been out of the building for a few days, I don't get to spend as much time with all you attorneys, so it's kind of nice, except it's a little hot throwing luggage and those sort of things. But early in session, one of your chairs had a hearing on shutting down this place, and it's just here we are, where I realize we have a court case, and someone's got to go to work and represent a position for this body. But you've had 4 or 5, 6 months to get this done, and I just want to express kind of the common man perspective that it's frustrating that you haven't come to a deal. I think negotiating is I wish we didn't have to talk all this mediator talk and all this stuff, but now we've got offers going back and forth and supposedly, but I don't know that they're the public doesn't seem to think they're real, and I just I guess I want to express my disappointment. I realize the deadline's on Thursday, but you had a hearing on a shutdown early in session, part of your leadership team, and I think it's pretty clear that from that to me, why didn't you deal with this problem then? It probably would have brought out some of the legal problems, and then we could have dealt with it, not even had this meeting today, because you could have dealt with it early on in a rules committee, realizing at that hearing that you had. But I just wonder why you feel comfortable having a hearing early in session on a shutdown, and then now here we are. And was it a plan, or was it I don't really totally buy into that, but so I hope your answer is going to be no. But it sure is frustrating, because here we are and here we go. I'm just, I think it's sad for Minnesota, sad for all of us, sad for us as a body, and I'm deeply disappointed.
Well, Representative Lilly, 3 points. Number one, the earlier discussions that Representative Abler had in his hearing were probably very important. He was trying to look after the safety and well-being of people who receive services in hospitals and clinics across the state of Minnesota. We were very, very disappointed when the governor said that he wasn't going to pay for these services in hospitals and clinics and our care providers as a part of his shutdown, when other services were that didn't deal with life safety were included. We were very, very happy that he changed his mind yesterday and decided that that was a actual priority for him in terms of life safety and prioritization. So point number one, that is the reason for that. Number two, I would say that you characterize as there's offers being traded both ways. I wish that were the case. If that were the case, we probably would not be here. But in fact, it has been over 90 days since we've heard from the governor. We have two offers on the table, one meeting his position and over half of the budget, another position that we put forward that we said we'll meet you at your number for half of the budget 2 weeks ago. We came back again and said that we would. You campaigned on tax increases. We campaigned on tax cuts. You campaigned on $38 billion. We campaigned on $30 billion. We'll drop our tax cuts. We'll put a $34 billion budget on the table, which is much more than a lot of folks would like to spend. I am proud of our budget. I am proud of the work that our folks put forward. I do not apologize for the great reforms that are put forward and on the table. I am extremely disappointed that the governor has not engaged, has not returned any offer with a counteroffer, and so to characterize it as such is simply false. We are here as a very, very last resort because the governor has brought this to the courts, suggesting that instead of negotiation, we hired a mediator because he doesn't like the position of the House and the Senate. If we want to discuss that, that would be great. I wish you were in the room. We could have that discussion. We could probably get a deal done. But we're not there. We're in court, unfortunately, and we're having to hire a lawyer to represent the House, and it brings no pleasure upon any of us. Further discussion. Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chair, I really have to comment on your characterization of those negotiations, and I have been in the room on some of those negotiations, and I believe that you really did mischaracterize those. I believe and I see the offers that have been made by the House Republicans as rearranging the deck furniture on a Titanic. There has been no serious movement on your part. You came in at $34 billion and you said this is our first, best, and last offer, and that is where you have stayed at $34 billion. And what you haven't been talking about is the impact that this is going to have on real Minnesotans. The highest cuts in higher education in the history of the state of Minnesota, those are real cuts. Those are real impacts on real families. You have said that there is no tax increases, yet you're cutting renter's credit, which is a tax increase on anyone who has a rental property. You're cutting the homeowner credit, which is a tax increase on anybody who owns a home. So you can't just sit here and say that you've been moving when, in fact, you haven't been moving, and you aren't talking about the real impacts that these are going to have on real Minnesotans. And, Mr. Chair, I am disappointed that you can't get the deal done. Mr. Chair, when the DFL was in control of the House and the Senate and there was a Republican governor, we could get the deal done, and we did. It was called compromise and looking out for what's in the best interest of Minnesotans. And, Mr. Chair, you haven't gotten the deal done, and that is your job. And when you say you moved to the governor's number at 50%, you didn't. You said the public safety number, you said you were going to match the governor's number, you're $30 million short. Not only were you $30 million short, but you put in social policies that are unacceptable, and you also took shifts and gimmicks. For example, the fire safety account. That is currently a fee that people pay on their homeowner's insurance. You took that money, put it in the general fund. You took what was a fee for public safety and you made it a tax. So you can pretend all you want, but basically what you have is rearranging the deck furniture on the Titanic when it comes to your proposals that you put forward. And Mr. Chair, I am very disappointed because there is no reason the Minnesota House shouldn't be able to put forward a comprehensive package that is acceptable to a governor of an opposite party. We did it. It's doable.
Representative Hillstrom, I might remind you that, in fact, you did not. In fact, the governor put forward the budget. You failed to do so, and the governor balanced your budget and did your job through an allotment. I was around for that, and a lot of us didn't enjoy it as much. However, I think we've gotten a little bit off topic and perhaps down a political field that we need to go back to our discussion of whether or not we are going to move forward with the resolution. But I see Representative Pepin. I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
I'm good.
Okay. I'll renew my motion for the R19 resolution. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please no.
No.
Motion prevails. Move to our next one. On expense, is there RB3B. Move the R3B resolution expense reimbursement and would ask Mr. McCormick to explain the changes in this resolution.
Mr. Chair, the Rules Committee adopted the R3 resolution at the beginning of the legislative session. This is an amendment to the existing R3 resolution. It makes two sets of changes. The first set are on page 3, and if you look at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, there is travel reimbursement for constituent service travel. The current R3 resolution would allow reimbursement on a monthly basis, and this changes that to be reimbursable for actual miles traveled at the federal mileage rate Therefore, members would have to keep a log of miles traveled and submit that. The second and third sets of changes are on page 4. On line 2, we reduced the per diem for House members from $77 per diem to $66 per diem. The third change is at the bottom on page 4. This allows per diem to be suspended or canceled during a shutdown of state government. Those are the three changes.
Discussion. Representative House.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCormick, I have probably just clarification, starting on page 2 and continuing on page 3, where it talks about the interim and how we itemize the interim in the future. I always thought the way it's written, like starting on the end of line 29, it travel reimbursement. It doesn't say mileage reimbursement, but later it does in the very last sentence on page 4, line 7, reimbursements must be for actual miles traveled. I understand that, but I always thought the interim expense was travel. If you spent the whole day throughout your district, and mine isn't the largest, but it's rather large, you'd have a meal, you'd keep a receipt, that would be part of it. Is that not the case? Is it just the miles you drive?
Mr. Chair, I think House Controller Reynolds could talk a little about the difference between the two.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Howden, it's always, this section of reimbursement has always been just the actual travel portion, not the meals. Meals would come under expenses if you could charge those meals to actual work also. Those would come in those are in a different reimbursement.
Mr. Reinholz, Representative House.
Okay, thank you. And then I have one other question, and I'm not sure where that falls, so I don't really even see it in here. It's been, I thought, in the rules, maybe it's an unwritten rule, that we have one trip per month that we are allowed to come down here. We get mileage, I think, one day per diem and a night's lodging, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I don't see that in here, but it's always been the case. Did we change that or totally eliminate that at some point that I'm unaware of?
Is Mr. Reinholz?
No, we did not eliminate that. That is still the existing policy.
So that, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, if a member comes down to do state business and comes down to the SOB, they get mileage, they get one night's lodging, do they get 2 days per diem or 1 day per diem?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Reinholz.
Representative Howe, that policy is in a different policy. That's in the interim expense policy. And that number of nights is based on the distance you are from the Capitol. You are far enough away, you get the two. So that policy is not being changed, though, in this proposal.
Thanks.
Further discussion. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question on the last section dealing with per diem. Payment of per diem may be suspended on line 5. Could you explain to me the may? You know, who will make that decision? Will it be the Rules Committee? And if so, is it an all or nothing proposition, or could certain segments be pulled out? I guess I'm just looking for a little more clarification on who's the may and who determines that.
I'm sorry, Representative Norton, I didn't hear you when you first said. Could you give me the page and line number again? I'm sorry.
It's the page 404, line 5, second sentence. Payment of per diem may be suspended or canceled during a shutdown. I'm wondering who will make that designation. Will it be come to the Rules Committee? Is it just done on, you know, by the chair or the speaker? Or I guess I'm looking for procedure.
Representative Norton, that's the speaker.
And Mr. Chair, the second
Representative
part,
Norton.
Thank you. The second part of that question was, is it an all or nothing proposition? Could the speaker determine that one party or another won't get it, or certain members, or does an all or nothing proposition, or does he have the authority to make those decisions?
Representative Norton, perhaps Mr. McCormick could get to the intent.
Mr. Chair, the reimbursement of members is something that is done on the basis of every member being equal, having election certificate, and being treated on an equal and fair basis. As I understand this, I don't think the Speaker has the authority to pick and choose among members by party or by region or anything on those lines.
Further discussion?
Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. McCormick.
Chair, Controller Reinholz has brought me a very simple technical amendment, which I think we could incorporate, and that is on page 3, line 7, the sentence at the end, we're just going to add a clause that says, effective July 1, 2011, reimbursements must be for actual miles traveled and at the federal mileage rate. So that means this policy kicks in on July 1.
Does everybody have that oral amendment? Just adding the July date to the page 3, line 7, in before reimbursement. Discussion? Yes. Mr. President Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a general comment about the process of finding savings in this process. To me, when I look at the situation, I've always considered this position to be one that I would serve for a time and then move on. So the issue of compensation has not been a particular concern of mine on a personal basis. But I am concerned about the fact that the state of Minnesota's compensation for those who serve in state government in the legislature is fairly moderate compared to most other states. And when I think about the makeup of a legislature, my concern is that we are able to attract people, not only those who have means, but also those who represent the broad swath of the population, and particularly young people who are beginning their careers in the private sector or with business, in business, and that if we continue to reduce these reimbursements, simply, I suggest, so that the public feels more satisfied in some way, I think we are closing the door to allow many, especially young people who could make a contribution to state government simply because it's economically impossible for them to serve unless they come from a family or a circumstance in which they don't have to depend on the salary. So I just think the whole process is nickel and diming this situation and really restricting in the future many people who ought to be serving the legislature, not simply those of us who may be financially in a better situation. So I just think the direction you're taking the legislature as far as compensation is very unfortunate.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Further discussion? I will incorporate the technical amendment that was brought up before Representative Benson's comment on page 3, line 8. We'll go ahead and incorporate that. With that, any further discussion to the R3B resolution? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, please no. Motion prevails. We're going to tuition. That's the R10A. Okay, next members in your packet is the R10A resolution on tuition reimbursement. I would ask Mr. McCormick to please explain the changes that we're doing here.
Mr. Chair, members, the existing R10 resolution provides for reimbursement for tuition. It also provides for reimbursement for technical training, conferences, seminars, employer-mandated coursework, and other technical classes. This new version suspends just the tuition reimbursement portion of this, and those are suspended for fiscal years 2012 and 2013.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Is there discussion to the R10 amendment or resolution? Excuse me. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
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 Motion prevails. The next resolution will be on deferred compensation in your packet. It's the R18 resolution. I would ask Mr. McCormick to explain the resolution.
Mr. Chairman, under current employee benefits, the House provides a contribution for deferred compensation. This resolution suspends that between January 1, 2012 and June 30, 2013.
Is there a discussion? Representative Norton.
Thank you. And I should have asked this before the last one, as we're affecting the staff here that are valuable to all of us. Have you had a communication? Has there been adequate opportunity for folks to be, you know, given information about these changes, and have they had a chance to share their thoughts and ahead of time? I guess I just want to make sure that there's been good communication with them. Or if not, are you going to do something moving forward?
Yeah, thank you for that, Representative Norton. This, these portions were of these resolutions, with the exception of the shutdown portions, were in the state gov finance bill through the committee process. Mm-hmm. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Well, I appreciate that, and so they have heard that this is a possibility, but since we're moving ahead without the normal process here and we're doing it in rules, I guess I would just ask that, you know, due care be given to the feelings of our staff, and, you know, and I'm sure the departments will work very hard to get this information out quickly. I mean, I know as a having been in a role of changing rules for staff before, they don't like finding out in the news, that it would be best to make certain that they find out ahead of time and in an appropriate manner. So I would just ask that we be very cognizant of our staff's feelings and when we're affecting their paychecks and their opportunity, which we're affecting both here.
Appreciate that, Representative Norton, and I think we've had good communication with Mr. Charbonneau on the minority side, and our staff has been doing a good job of keeping folks informed and never enough information, particularly when things are changing quickly. A point well taken. With that, I would renew the R18 resolution. A18 resolution. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. The last item in your packet, representatives, is the R5A resolution dealing with postage. I'll ask Mr. McCormick to explain the R5A.
Mr. Chair, members, the current R5 resolution in effect sets postage reimbursement and postage policies for the House of Representatives. The changes are on page 2, which allows essentially the use of the postage meter or the refilling of the postage meter to be suspended by order of the Speaker or Majority Leader during preparation and adjustment to a government shutdown.
Discussion. Discussion to the R5A. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can either you or Mr. McCormick please explain the practical implementation of this?
Right. Representative Murphy, how does, if Mr. McCormick can help us out, how does this postage thing machine work, and how do we pay for it, and what's going to happen?
I think Mr. Crow has it.
Mr. Crow, can you help
Chair,
us?
Mr. Chair, Greg Crow, co-controller, House Representative Murphy. Right now, we kind of have a bank that with the metering company, and then the it gets dropped into the meter as it's needed. And so we make regular payments to put money onto that postage meter. At this time, in order to limit expenses and maximize the House's carry forward, this would allow us to stop putting money on the meter. We can't do that arbitrarily because it affects the members' postage that's authorized in this, you know, in the unchanged part of this rule. So that's not an administrative function that we could perform to save some money, so it had to be changed in rules here. Members will still have access to whatever postage stamps they have, and there are some still available in supply, but at this point the meter is running low, and we will be suspending use of it for anything beyond essential use, such as the need to mail paychecks or reimbursements, things like that.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Crow. So essentially what this means is we're going to be limiting members' ability to communicate with constituents in the course of the shutdown.
Representative Murphy, I think the intent is to try to do the best we can with what we have and conserve cash. Representative Mr. Crow, can you talk a little bit about the ability for representatives to access postage and meters?
Mr. Chair and members, the use of the meter will be limited. Members will still be able to use whatever postage they have on hand, and obviously electronic media as it's available to your constituents, but it won't be as to the extent that you used the meter for mass mailings, that will be limited to some extent.
And so Mr. Crow, we're just talking about the meter. We're not talking about rounding up stamps in the building or anything like that.
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Hillstrom. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Crow, can you let us know when you think this will take effect?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Crow, can you tell us when these other expenditures under this resolution may be suspended, when this is going to take effect?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, it will take effect on order of the Speaker. I presume that will happen pretty quickly once the Rules Committee has made Speaker or Majority Leader. I presume that will happen pretty quickly if this rules change is adopted. At this time, it will be most. My understanding is that what we're trying to control for the most part with this is the use of the meter, and so that'll be the initial. We won't be putting any additional money onto the meter, and I suspect that will take place pretty quickly.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, it's probably time for us to break out our soapboxes.
Thank you. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that the Speaker's office got a larger portion of stamps than the rest of the members and the minority. So is there a bank of stamps someplace? I've used all my stamps, and if I can't mail my constituents, and yet the Speaker has the ability to do that, can I just go to the Speaker's office and request a bunch of rolls of stamps, or what do I do now?
Representative Hillstrom, the Speaker of the House this year is just as last year, represents the entire state, and has a budget that reflects that. If you want to do more mailing than your postage allows, you could do what I've done in the past when I use up my postage, which is to dig into my own pocket or my campaign's pocket and to use non-campaign funds for that, which I and many others have done in the past.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
I haven't used all the postage that I'm allowed, but I chose to use my stamps first and save my meter for second. So all my money is currently sitting on the meter, Mr. Chair. So by passing this resolution, what you're saying is that Representative Zellers can contact the people in my district, but I can't. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Chair, or is there a place I can go and request some more stamps?
Representative Hillstrom, I think you have your answer. I think Mr. Crow is probably going to get an additional discussion. Further discussion to the R5A postage? Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair and members, if members wish to, they're limited by the resolution to how much postage they can use. We do have stamps on hand, and you can talk to the post office, to the, you know, in the sergeant's office, and they have an additional supply of stamps that you can request, if the ones that your legislative assistant currently has aren't sufficient to meet your mailing needs and still fit within your allotment under the resolution. But if we run out, the Speaker could also eliminate the purchase of additional stamps as part of this limitation that's being changed today.
Further discussion? Seeing none, I'll renew the R5A resolution. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. That concludes our work for today. Appreciate everybody traveling in today. Truly do appreciate it. And with that, members, we are adjourned.